California.
Okay.
91362.
Okay, great. I personally will send you this.
Oh, thanks.
Uh-huh, thanks, Sharon. Okay, I'm going to go to the conference mode right now, and then in a couple of minutes or so, a few minutes, I will go back to for questions. All right. Okay, everybody. Thank you for spending your time and energy and your intellect on this. I hope it's useful to you. The overview of this teleconference will first give a brief history about how the class was started, how we came up with the idea, and how it differs from other classes, how Writing for Wellness actually helps and is an addition to some of the journaling classes that are already in place. We'll talk about the expected outcomes, what you could expect if you offered this class, and I think it's always good to have that. I guess it's because I'm a teacher and we always had our objectives, because we need to know where we're going before we start. So anyway, the next thing is how to set up a Writing for Wellness series. Next is how to use the book, its thematic approach, and its lessons, how we actually use the lessons from the book in the class. Creating a welcoming and emotionally safe atmosphere, because people with cancer and people who've had traumatic experiences, as you know, are hesitant, and we have to be a little bit more welcoming than just in any other class that you might be offering. How to encourage participants. Some of the people don't like writing. They don't think of themselves as writers, and you have to, I'll show you some techniques that we use to put them at ease and encourage them and make it actually a positive process that they want to come back to. The other things we'll discuss are using your own on-site and local publications for the participants' writings that they produce. And this is a little complicated, but I'll be glad to go over that with you. It works.
The conference is in lecture mode.
For some questions.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
First, how Writing for Wellness class started at the City of Hope. If you have read the book or read the beginning of the book, I'm a two-time breast cancer survivor, and I am a patient at the City of Hope. Right after 9/11, I realized that I wanted to give back to my community, to the United States. I just wanted to give back. So I came up with the idea, after discussing this with some sociologists there at the City of Hope, my doctor, and a couple of the patient education people who work there. And we decided to have Writing for Wellness because we felt that there was a need for this on our campus. When I say assessing a need, it's good to send out or ask patients if they would attend such a class, and you can do this by making a piece of paper with just a few questions and asking them if they wouldn't mind filling it out. They don't have to put their names on it. And then collecting those, you can go around to the various waiting rooms or whatever facility that you happen to be in and ask them if they would think that was a helpful thing, and if they would attend if it were at a certain time, day, afternoon, or morning, afternoon, or evening. And then you kind of see if there is a need. The other thing is you have to obtain permission from your facility that's sponsoring this, whether it's a church or a hospital or a medical center, a wellness center. That's usually not a problem. Most of the patient education activities are welcomed. Then the audience. It's occurred to me after I've made this just for adults and just for patients, caregivers, and family members and medical staff that there might be another audience out there as well, and that would be the parents of children with cancer. So I haven't addressed that now, but I do think there is a need for that as well. I've had some of them come in, but not too many. So that could be a separate class. But right now, I teach adults. I've had children as young as 10 years old attend with their parents, and one girl actually has a poem in the book about her mother. So it's not restricted, but it's aimed at adults. Then advertising the upcoming classes at your facility, it's a good thing once the permission is obtained and once you know where to have this, it's a good thing to advertise it, I'd say a good couple of weeks, 3 weeks maybe even in advance of the event, because it's new. Once it's established, then no problem. People talk about it, and by word of mouth, you still advertise it, but maybe just a week before. Establishing the time, place, and atmosphere is critical, and that is one thing that we need to discuss further, and you might have some questions about that. I taught it at night at first, and I got a lot of people who were working during the daytime and a lot of staff members as well and patients. But we left out the people who were coming to the facility and didn't really want to stay around till 6 p.m. So that is really up to you to see what time and place would work the best. And I went to noon most recently, and I get a lot of people who come by at noon. In January, I'm going back to evenings. So we're going to switch around a little bit so that we can serve more people. The patients come to the City of Hope from as far away as 50 miles and drive that distance. So they don't want to stay till 6 o'clock at night. So the noon works very well for them. But people who are patients who work all day long really appreciate a night conference, a night class. To go on to the next slide, the next few words here, how writing for wellness differs from journaling. There is a big difference between what I do in my classes and what's in the book and journaling. Both are very important, and I don't think you can say one is better than the other or one should be replacing the other. I think they can work together, and some people love journaling a lot more than they might like writing for wellness, and others like writing for wellness and don't really do journaling. Some people do both, and I really encourage people to do both. Many cancer centers and wellness programs have journaling already in place, and I think that's a good thing because people are already coming and they are writing. Now, the Writing for Wellness program at the Wellness Community in Phoenix, Arizona, was a journaling program up until about a month ago. We went there, they have our book, and they are now doing both. They are doing Writing for Wellness using our book and journaling. So I can't remember the woman's last name. I can get it for you and put it on email. Her name is Anne, and she came to a lecture that I had and decided to adapt the book to her classes, and she's loving it. She said it's working very well. Writing for wellness can be done in conjunction with journaling, as I said. It doesn't replace it, but this is the difference. Writing for wellness is focused and directed writing. And by that, I mean, let's pretend you're in my class today, and you're out there and you're sitting there, and I say, we're going to talk about the first time you heard that either you, your sister, your patient, or someone that is a friend of yours or family member got diagnosed with, and then I have a blank. It's either cancer or some other traumatic illness. In my case, it was cancer. And I hand them these pieces of paper that have blanks on them. And this is what we all write about. It's not journaling where you tell me, you write down in a diary form about what you're going through at that moment, that day. We take you back to when you were diagnosed and how you felt. Now, good writing has facts and feelings in it. And so I encourage them to write the facts. This is what was happening at the time. And then I felt blank. And then I have them fill in those blanks about how they felt. Now, it sounds rather simplistic to do it this way, but if you're dealing with some people that are not writers, you may be dealing with people who are not well-educated. And yet it doesn't seem to matter whether I have a doctor in the room or I have a high school dropout in the room. Those people seem to be able to start writing immediately when I give them these prompts, these writing prompts. As you know, journaling just encourages the daily outpouring of events and emotions that they're going through at the time, and it's not focused. You could go the rest of your life and never discuss with anybody how you felt at that moment when you found out bad news. By doing this, it kind of targets emotions and doesn't allow the mind to avoid that and deny those emotions. So that's the difference between the two. Now, Writing for Wellness has everyone in the group write on the same topic, as I have just said. And that way, when we have a moment after they have written, and I ask if anybody wants to share what they've written, I never point at anyone and say, you read what you've written. That would be very invasive, and it would upset the whole tone of and the purpose of the writing. But I do say, would you like to share? Would anyone like to share? Usually what I do is I read what I have written, and it's about my own experience. And that kind of breaks the ice. And then others meekly sometimes raise their hands. So right now I'd like to go back off of this lecture mode and see if anybody has any questions about this. And I will be quiet and listen to you just a moment. Are we back? Hello?
Okay,
are we back? Are there any questions or any comments about this that you might have about the process so far?
I have a question.
Sure.
You have that you write about your experience.
Right.
And you read that and share it.
Yes.
So you're saying that a facilitator should be a survivor?
Not necessarily. Because most of us have had, that's a very good question. I personally am a survivor, but I have had, I've had to have surgery on occasions over this past 6 years when I've been volunteering and teaching the classes, and I've had other people sit in for me. And one was the daughter of a woman who had cancer, so she was a family member. I had another person who was the father of his son had to have a bone marrow transplant, and he sat in for me and taught the class from that perspective. I have had a nurse at the City of Hope, who is Marilyn Rhodes, who is a RN. She has taught the class, and I've had another staff member who taught the class that just has friends who have had cancer. She has no cancer in her family. So really, I know that sociologists and medical social workers could do this. I think, truthfully, just about anyone could teach this class, given the guidelines. And the book makes it very easy because a lot of the writings in there are from various perspectives. But that's a very good question. At your facility, who would you think might be a good teacher?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Well, I do have a person who is qualified and is a cancer survivor,
mm-hmm.
and are one of our social workers.
Great. Well, it's really not very difficult, because I have always found that if you provide a nice atmosphere, and you allow the people to write privately, and they know that you're not going to ask them anything about it. They can share it if they'd like to, which 99% of the time they do, but I want them to be quiet and calm. They're very glad to be able to express these emotions. The emotions are all inside of them waiting to come out. And the person who is the facilitator just offers them the time and the place and the comfort to do that. I don't think they have to be a professional teacher. I don't think they have to be a doctor or a nurse or even a sociologist. I think they just have to be a listening and kind person who wants to help people. So that's my opinion, and I've sort of proven it by who the substitutes have been for me, and people have always said they did a good job without any real training. Okay, any other comments? Okay, well, let's go on then. I'll put it back on lecture mode, and we'll talk about the expected outcomes. Okay, the expected outcomes are really kind of, I call them expected now. I wasn't really expecting the outpouring of emotions that I got when I started this class. I thought people would write. I thought they would keep it very private. I thought they would feel better. But I didn't expect to look out among those participants and see them writing almost furiously, just writing and writing, as I told them that we would be quiet, and all they would have to do is write, and then we'd stop in a few minutes. I give them about 5 or 10 minutes to write. And all the time they're doing that, I also write, because I always have something to pour out myself. But the outcomes are the release of pent-up emotions that come out through these focused topics. And the topics might be as seemingly simple as a person I would like to forgive. Oh my goodness, things just pour out. Excuse me. Also, it might be a person I would like to thank who has helped me through my current situation. And I tell them they could send a thank you note, but let's just write one directly to someone. Oh, they just pour out these emotions. And sometimes they start to tear up a little bit. And sometimes if it's a topic of anger, they really write furiously. So that's one of the things that you can expect to have happen. And then the starters are used in class to help the participants begin to write. And as I mentioned earlier, that starter about the shock of diagnosis, I usually start with that. Sometimes I distribute two different topics, not topics, but two different starters, because it just depends on the wording, and those are in the book under It's Your Turn. I usually have two or three different ways of starting people to write, because we're all different, and that day one sentence may not be as good of a starter as another. And then to go on to say the participants write and often, I mean almost always, report feeling relieved. They say to me, oh, I don't know where that came from. My gosh, I wasn't even thinking about that person, and this poured out from me. Then the participants discuss previously unexpressed emotions and feelings. Sometimes they'll tell me, you know, this is the first time I have written about this or told anybody how I felt. And sometimes they say, you know, I can talk in this class and I can write in this class, but I usually don't tell anybody how I'm feeling. I just tell them, I'm fine, everything's great. And then they get to write about how they're really feeling, the fear, the frustration, sometimes anger. And then they say they really feel better. Laughter, tears, bonding with fellow participants almost always happens. I say almost always because every once in a while you will have a person in the class who probably needs more than just a piece of paper and a pencil to get out some of their their fears. They do need a social worker. They do need someone who is a trained psychologist. In the six years I've done this, I think I've had three that we referred to the psychologists and social workers at City of Hope. And I'm not sure they weren't fairly disturbed before they came to the class and even before they had cancer. So out of hundreds of people, three people have had, we thought they really needed a little more than I was trained to give, and we spoke with them and got them some further help. But generally, more than 90% of the participants return to the class. In fact, that's one of the problems I'm having. Some of these people have been coming to the class for 4 years because I've been having it every other week for 6 years. And it's not a problem, but we don't want it to become a closed club so that other participants who come in don't feel like they're starting sort of fresh. So that's why we're going to a four series instead of just a continuing class that goes on forever. We're going to do this in a series of four classes, and that I really recommend to all of you. Setting up a Writing for Wellness class is on the next slide. And you do need somebody who believes in writing and believes in helping. I don't think you can assign people this kind of a task, if you want to call it that way, an assignment. They kind of have to hear about it and say, oh, I'd like to do that. Cutting through the red tape is something that you would have to see at your facility. We didn't have any trouble at the City of Hope. They do have a lot of these patient-oriented holistic therapies. They have art for the heart, they call it, where they come in and do artwork. They have music therapy. They have other kinds of therapy, which I'm sure you're familiar with, to help people. They even have a comedian that comes in and makes people laugh at the comedy theater. So they do have, they're open to that, and I would think most places would be. But let's say you're doing this in a church or a place that maybe hadn't thought of this before, you might have to get some more people on board. Then finding a willing and empathetic teacher. We talked about that earlier, and I think that's essential. It doesn't have to be a credentialed teacher, just a teacher and a person that wants to do this. Determining the time and length and place. Now, my classes are an hour and 15 minutes, and I think that is about the length of time you want to have. Any shorter than that, you don't have much time for them to write. And any longer than that, it's too tiring for cancer patients, for one thing, and other people have to get back to work, back home, they have other duties. But most people can afford an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes, so that's very good. It's worked for us. Having reservations or drop-ins, that's really up to you. I have allowed drop-ins for a long time, and somebody will be at the City of Hope talking to somebody else, find out about the class, and it's the day that they're there. And they come in and they say, oh, I said, is it okay if I just sit in? And I'm fine with that as long as there's chairs. So reservations are a good thing, too, because especially if you're going to possibly use the book, you might want them to have a copy of it available when they come in, if you're going to give assignments from it. Or if you're way in advance and you say, these are the things that need to be done, you have about 3 weeks ahead, then they could purchase the book from your bookshop at your hospital or facility, or they could order it online. Amazon.com has it, and so does Idle Arbor have it, and a lot of other places like Barnes & Noble and a lot of places, different prices. But anyway, they would have that book and be able to look through it a little bit beforehand. Okay, so let's go back and see if there are any other questions. I'm back on with you all if there are any Any thoughts? I'm not sure. I'll just ask you a question. What kinds of facilities do you have? Do you have a place that's like a lecture room or a break room or something that you could teach these classes in?
Penny again.
Uh-huh.
We have a large room that we can set up with tables, or we even have like a living room that has places that maybe we could have people could use a clipboard and set there.
Yeah, that would be nice too. Either one of those works very well. We have tables, and I usually put them in kind of a horseshoe arrangement so that I can sit down in the open part of the horseshoe, you know, and sit. I don't have a table in front of me, so I'm kind of open to the people. I don't like to stand at a lectern or anything. I like to be one of them, since I really am one of them. Either one works fine. I just taught a course. Just a night, it wasn't a course. I was a guest speaker at the Breast Cancer Survivors night, and they had what you're talking about, like a couple of couches and some overstuffed chairs, and we didn't have clipboards, so they just used a magazine. But surprisingly, that worked very well. When I teach my noon class, we have food, and so the table situation works better. Because they'd be balancing their lunch on their lap and everything otherwise. But if it's at night and all they're going to have is, say, a cup of coffee and a cookie, they could have those and then after that's done, sit down and write. I do emphasize the food, and I do that in the book too. I believe that people they bond. It relaxes them to sit there and have a little something before, especially with strangers, they start talking a lot more when there's food around. You know, almost every celebration we have as Americans, we have food. And so it comforts them and it makes them relax and they sit down and it just works really well. How about anybody else? Do you all have similar situations or how about out? Go ahead.
My name is Sharon, and I'm at the Westlake Wellness Center, and we have a similar facility with the small rooms, the central room, the kitchen, and what I've been involved with has been mostly the kids' circle, the social workers, but I can see how, you know, using your description of your class, how it could be used there, and it would be we would have a fine facility for doing that.
Great. You know, I believe that you could just take chairs and put them outside and have a fine class. But if it's going to be a continuing thing, as you say, having the facility that works is easier on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I just taught a class at the it was called a writer's workshop and book signing at the Azusa Library out here, and it was not a perfect situation, and a lot of people had come on their lunch hour, and just before you could imagine, I had them all writing and raising their hands and reading what they had written, and so the facility is important but not critical. Any other comments on that?
I do have one question.
Sure.
About when you were referring to some of the more disturbed or emotionally needy participants that you had, what briefly were some of the telltale signs that alerted you to their further needs?
Well, a really easy one and all three of these people had that same situation. They did not write at all on the topics that were given. And when they read, they were not focused on their cancer. They were focused on being very angry with someone in their life that did something that had nothing to do with any of this. And really, that happened more than one time. It wasn't just the one class. And so I spoke to, I didn't want to call these people aside because I didn't feel that was my role. But I did have a social worker in the class, and I asked her what she thought because I thought it was important to get this person, these people, they happened at different times, some assistance. And so that's what I did. I mentioned it to them. They said, yeah, these people are very, I've forgotten the word that they use, but they're very self-involved, and they are unable to really relate to other people. And it could be relating to the cancer. It could be even possibly a drug situation where they're taking drugs that interact with them in a different way. So, as I say, it didn't happen often, but it happened 3 times in 6 years, and so I did. I just wanted to mention it, and those were the telltale signs. They did not relate to what was going on. One woman actually left the room very angry and said, "I don't have to listen to this." And it was nobody was really talking to her at the time. I hope that helps.
Yeah,
they were pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Other people do get emotional, and don't get me wrong, they might cry and they might tear up, or they might laugh hysterically, just at the whole situation they're in. But that's a normal reaction. These were quite obviously not. Okay, anybody else? Okay, let's go then to the next page here, and I'll go back on the lecture. The way the book, I don't know whether all of you have seen the book, but it follows the cancer journey. You can see that from the headings that are in the table of contents, and we go from getting started, how to start the class, how I started it, and then the various people that come in. I have them write the thank you letter, the love letter. Love letters are to people that they really want to thank in their lives. And they're not morose. These are not things that are terrible and horrible. These are things that they might really want to thank somebody who's helped them over their life, or they just might want to express love to another person. Then the private anguish is things that they haven't told anybody. Expressing anger, and then forgiveness. We talk a lot about that. In order to heal and be whole, you have to forgive. Unfinished business, that's some things that they might like to do over in their lives, or finish up some things that they haven't done. Bravest hearts is about who their heroes are, and that's really a wonderful thing. They love doing that. Then it goes, getting on with your life is the next section in the book, and these are how cancer has changed you and what you want to do about that. And they count their blessings. A lot of times they want to do things for other people. They can choose happiness. A lot of times we have people that come in, and I think all of us are like that once in a while. We choose to be unhappy and focus on the unhappy parts of our lives. And this is how to choose happiness. Then laughter as medicine. There's a lot of humor in the class and in the book. And I coordinated that into a couple of chapters, one called Laughter as Medicine and one is Smiling Through the Tears. Most people say they are forever changed by the cancer journey or any other traumatic illness. And we talk about the lessons they learned. And then the next one in that getting on with your life is happy days are near again. It's just, they realize, and I realize in my life, the small matters don't count, and the bad hair days and that sort of thing. And what matters are what you're going to do with the rest of your life. Then the compassionate outcomes is the final section in the book, and that is, where are you going now? Your unspoken dreams, rediscovering who you are, and giving back. A lot of my students become that aren't already in the field volunteer at the City of Hope. They've decided they're going to do that. Or they volunteer for the wellness community, because we have one in Pasadena. They also do things in their churches. A couple of them are starting writing for wellness classes in their churches. So it's having an effect on people. The next thing is the book is the classes could be divided into a 4-part series. And this is a big change. As I told you, I used to do it up until a week ago, every other week for 6 years. So it was always open. People came and went, and a lot of them stayed. Now I'm trying to train them to become teachers themselves and go back to their communities and offer these classes. But a 4-part series could be tried. And using the book, which is in 4 parts, you'd have people come in, read aloud some of the things that are in there, and then go to the It's Your Turn, which is at the end of each chapter. And those are the lessons you would say, okay, take 10 minutes and write about this. And they do, and then see how it goes, how if they write. It's amazing. They will write, I can guarantee you. They do write, and they feel good about it, and then you have them read if they want to. What I always do is, that's only 10 minutes. That's not enough time to write a full piece. So what you can do is ask them to go ahead and take it home with them, work on it, and then if they'd like to, bring it back the next time. They could read it aloud if they feel like it. And many times they do. They read aloud. So patients, caregivers, medical staff, and family are included. It's Your Turn assignments will encourage them to write. And I'm not saying that this book is the end all of everything. It's just the culmination of 6 years of doing these classes. And I felt, because I am a writing teacher, that I could put this together so that other people could use it. We'll have to see how that goes. I think it has a lot in it that will help people. And I think it can be used as a guidebook for these classes. Now, the next slide says creating a welcoming and emotionally safe atmosphere. And we talked a little bit about the group dynamics and seating. Privacy is a big issue. I tell them that what kind of goes on in that room should not be discussed elsewhere. They are not to go, if someone talks about their private medical situations, that really shouldn't go out of the room. And so far, it hasn't. We also have a little release form that the City of Hope has that I'd be also glad to, we could put that on the website probably. It's just a very simple sign-up sheet type thing that says, I realize that medical information is private, and if someone shares that in this class, I will not repeat it. It's very straightforward. Supportive and encouraging atmosphere, food and refreshments, I mentioned. I used, up until very recently, I brought all the food for lunch because I just felt like doing it. And then the students wanted to do potluck. I think they might have gotten tired of my chicken soup. Anyway, now bring their own offerings. They also really wanted to help me out. I shouldn't make a joke about that. They really did want to help me out, and they thought I was doing too much of that. Having adequate time to write, I'd say 10 minutes to 15 minutes is just about the limit, because some people write and write and write, and others write down a few things, and then they're finished for that time period, and you don't want them just sitting there. Make no demands on the participants. Sometimes they do just sit there for a while. They're a little stunned. They're in shock from some of the things that they've been going through. And if you had the book there, they could be reading the book. That would be fine. Alternative assignments I always have in It's Your Turn, because some people, as I said, just don't want to do that particular one, and they'll say, how about if I write about this? So I've included alternatives in the It's Your Turn section. The assignments should help people feel less alone. The cancer journey is sometimes very lonely, and having them together is kind of a support group, a writing group, a bonding. It does help them because they'll listen to what someone else has written and they'll say, oh, that's exactly how I felt. And then they'll talk about it. So it's not just writing. They're talking about what they wrote as well. So to turn to the next slide, it's called Encourage Participants. I relax them by reading my own writings aloud. I never insist that anyone else read aloud. I'm sensitive to the shy or emotionally fragile person. I've been a teacher for 33 years, so I can kind of look at somebody's face and say, they are not, they don't want to say anything right now. I'm not going to even look that direction. I'm not going to stare at them. I'm not going to make them feel nervous. So you just have to be empathetic. Then, this sounds rather silly, but it's worked wonderfully. I go to the 99-cent store, and I have a little basket, and I put little prizes in there. Sometimes they're journals. Sometimes they're to-do lists that stick on the refrigerator, or an interesting-looking pen or pencil. Sometimes they usually have to do with writing. Sometimes they don't. If it's Christmas or Hanukkah or any other holiday, I will put other little things in the basket. And then when they read out loud for the first time, I just pass them the basket and they can choose anything they want. And no one has ever not taken one of the prizes. They usually like them. Sometimes they're little teddy bears and all kinds of things. You know what you can get at the Dollar Tree or 99-cent store. I allow the people to show their emotions. And if they start to cry or they feel choked up, I always say, and a lot of times they'll say, oh, I'm sorry. And I say, no, you should never be sorry about having emotions, only sorry for not having emotions. And so I reinforce that. And if there's a especially good reader in class, sometimes we allow them to just hand it over to, in our case, Joan. Joan is a former teacher. She's a very good reader. And they hand it over, or they'll hand it to me. And they'll say, I'd like you to read this. So they want their words read, but they don't want to read them themselves, and allow that. And we always applaud those who take a chance and share their writings. In fact, we usually applaud after every writing. It's not really to be criticized. We don't have this class so that you can say, well, I really think she should have said this or that. And I tell the people, this is about getting your emotions out. This is not about winning the Nobel Prize. And so let me stop now and see if there are any other questions. Okay, we're back off the lecture. Are there any questions after hearing me go on for so long? Okay, no questions. Then I'm going on to use, let me, okay, are we back on lecture? Okay, I think you should use to publicize things for your class. After they've written something really, really good and you like it and you see that it could help others, you can use the newsletters that you have at your medical centers and include those poems and put their name in. They really like doing that. Or you could put up a poem or a essay on the bulletin boards. One of my students wrote about nurses, and we put it in all of the nurses' break rooms in the hospital, and they loved it. You can also send things to local or regional newspapers, national cancer magazines, or the Massey Cancer Center in Richmond, Virginia, blew up a lot of the poems. They had a poetry writing class. They enlarged them and put them on posters, and they put them in the hallways of the hospital. And one of the people that was involved in that told me that that worked wonders. Okay, let's go to the summary. I think this helps patients, caregivers, medical staff, and family cope with cancer. Writing for Wellness, A Prescription for Healing, can be a guidebook. As we said, having the right time, place, atmosphere, and teacher are important. They're all important, but you could try this out for 4 sessions and see how it works, and then work out the kinks. Food, prizes, praise, and publication all help and encourage patients and participants. Don't demand or expect perfection from yourself or from them or from the class at first, or ever, really. But the real message is writing can heal, and it helps people. So I'll go back on and see if there are any other comments. Otherwise, we will be finished. Just a second. Okay, well, thank you for participating, and I hope
I do have a question.
Okay, sure.
You mentioned that medical staff you've included in the class.
Yes.
How has that gone, and has there ever been like a uncomfortableness of them talking about the difficulty of working with people with cancer?
You mean the medical staff?
Yeah, has it been awkward for them to be included with patients?
Not really. It's really never come up. In fact, I never felt uncomfortable about it. I imagine if we would probably need to ask a couple of them. It turns out I have 2 people that have had cancer who come to the class who are also on the staff. So they kind of see it from both sides. I also have a staff member whose boyfriend died of cancer, so she's kind of on both. I really can't fully answer that because I'm not a staff member. I can only tell you that as a teacher, it didn't seem awkward. And I also, as a cancer patient, I didn't feel that it was disturbing. It would depend on the situation, I guess. But having so many different people in there, and I let them talk, I let them say what they think, that has never really come up. Occasionally, now just recently, we lost 2 of our participants in the classes, and that has been difficult. One just last week, and this is a person that's in the book. That was hard on all of us, and we came to the conclusion that we wanted to have a memorial type service, and we're doing that. Not in the classroom, on the campus, but just the people that wanted to participate. And I wouldn't call it awkward, but it was something that just seemed like the right thing to do. And they've all written things that they're going to read at this. So I don't know whether that exactly answers the question, but it hasn't seemed to be a problem. Okay, are there any other questions?
I have a question. A friend, who's a survivor patient, I would like her to maybe join us. When is your next lecture?
That is going to be in January. And are you the one out in Thousand Oaks?
Yes.
That is going to be in January. We haven't set the date exactly because I was going out of the country, and then my husband's gotten some medical problems, so we're probably not going to do that. So if you'll give me your telephone number, Sharon, I will call you.
805-496-0935.
0935. Okay. And I want to give everybody my email address in case you have any questions about this or any other thing that happens once you start the classes, if you do. It is Julie, J-U-L-I-E, dot Davey, D-A-V-E-Y, at Verizon.net. And I'm a big emailer. I'll be glad to get back to you. Well, thank you all for participating. And.